All right. So we are holding. So we are holding on Samach Chamed Beis, three lines from the bottom. Okay, so we started talking yesterday about Ribis. We established that even though there were two expressions, Neshech and Tarbis, in the Torah, we said really you can't have one without the other. Inevitably, Neshech involves Tarbis, and Tarbis involves Neshech, and therefore when you're over on one, inevitably you're over on the other. So now the Gemara is going to go and then quote a Braisa that explores this a little bit more. For background, again, I mentioned yesterday that there's three places where the Torah talks about the dinim of not taking ribis. We'll learn later on in the parak why the Torah mentions it in three different places. One is addressed to the loiva, not the borrower at ribis. The other to the malva, not to lend at ribis. And the third one to all the other parties involved, the edim or the scribe or whatever, to not be involved in it. But here in our Gemara, over here in our Braisa, we're going to be quoting two of them. So, Tana Rabbanan. The pasuk says, in Parshas Bahar, as kas b'cholay sitin leben neshech, you should not give to another yid your money at neshech, or marbis lo sitin achlacha, and don't give your food at marbis. So, ein li'ala neshech b'kesef ribis b'ochol. Based on that, you would only know that if you lend somebody money asking for ribis, then you're over on the issur of neshech, of taking neshech. And if you lend him food, if you lend him, for example, like we said in the Mishnah, grain, expecting more grain back, then you're over on the issur of tarbis, on the issur of ribis. Neshech v'oichel minayin, where do we know that the concept of neshech also applies to food? So that if you were to lend food at ribis, then like we said yesterday, you'd be over not only on tarbis, but also on neshech, you'd be over on two lavim. Kamadlema neshech oichel, therefore you have in Parshas Kitetzeh, when the Torah again talks about ribis, it says, don't take neshech oichel. It says actually neshech kesef or neshech oichel. So we see that neshech can apply equally to both. Ribis for kesef minayin. In Kisaita. What? In Kisaita, yeah. Ribis for kesef minayin. What about, how do we know that the concept of ribis also applies to money? Talmud Loma, neshech kesef. Therefore, so we have in that pasuk, again in Kisaita, it mentions the concept of neshech kesef. And in Eina Inyan LeNeshech Kesef, now we don't need that pasuk to teach us that you are over on Neshech if you lend money at interest. Sharek Vanem LeSashech LaAchicha, because you already have the pasuk, you already have the previous pasuk starts off by saying LeSashech LaAchicha, do not take Neshech from your brother. So you don't need the pasuk. It's actually not the previous pasuk. It's actually the beginning of the same pasuk. The whole pasuk goes LeSashech LaAchicha Neshech Kesef. Neshech oichel, neshech chol davar asher yishach. Don't take neshech from your brother, neshech of money, neshech of food, or neshech of anything else from which neshech could be taken.
So why didn't it say simply just neshech?
That's the point. Since it says loisashech la'achicha, the Torah did. So okay, the fact that the Torah had to mention neshech oichel is fine to teach us. Otherwise, you wouldn't know that neshech applies to food. Based on the pasuk in Parshas Bahar, you would only know that neshech applies to money, because it says over there es kas b'cholay sitin leben neshech. Once we have that, though, then you don't need the Torah to tell you again in Kiseite Neshech Kesef, Sharek Vanema LeSashech LaAchicha, because the pasuk, the beginning of that same pasuk says, don't take Neshech from your brother. Therefore, Tneu Inyan L'Ribis Kesef. Therefore, apply it instead. It's as if the pasuk had said, instead of Neshech Kesef, as if it had said Ribis Kesef. Apply it to, we have this as one of the regular middos that we use throughout the Gemara, is when we have a pasuk, which is not necessarily L'Gufoy, to teach us the actual din, because we already know it from someplace else, then we can use it instead to teach us a related din. In this case, we don't need it to tell us the concept that Neshech applies to money. We already know that. Therefore, we can use it to teach us that Ribis applies to money. Again, that if you were to lend money at ribis, we established before that if you lend food such as grain at interest, then you're over on both. You're over on marbis because of the pasuk in Bahar, and you're over on neshech because of the pasuk in Kisete. The same thing applies to kesef. The same thing applies to kesef, that if you lend money at interest, you're also over on both lands.
You have sukim for kesef.
Well, that's what we said. We have a pasuk that teaches us neshech by kesef, as kas b'chol sitin leben neshech, in Bahar. In Kisete, again, it repeats and says neshech kesef, but we don't need that, because we already know it from Bahar, and we also, anyway, the pasuk began lo sashech la'aficha. Therefore, it teaches us instead that ribis applies as well to kesef.
So you have two lavim for both.
So you have two lavim for both, yeah. Next, ainly
how can you extend?
Because that's how you can do it, because in Eina in Yilazet, Tneu in Yilazet. since we don't need, the Torah doesn't have extra words, since we don't need those, that pasuk to teach us again about neshech applying to kesef, therefore we can use it to teach us instead that ribis applies to kesef. It's a known thing, we have it throughout Shas. Aimli ela beloiva. Next, the Braisa continues, fine, you would only know based from these psukim that the isser is on the loiva, that the loiva, if a person borrows money at ribis, he is over on both of these lavin. But malva minayin, how do we know the same thing applies to the malva, that the malva is over on, that the malva is over on both of these lavin as well?
The one who stipulates the conditions. The
fine, but the loiva can be the one. The loiva can be the one who comes to the malva and says, lend me money and I'll pay you interest.
But if the malva doesn't want to, there's no ribis. The malve fixes the conditions to lend his money.
Yes, but you can also have, the fact is, we're going to see later on in the perek that one of these places is actually addressed to the loiva and the other one is addressed to the malve. Yeah.
Okay.
So, the malve minayin, how do we know that the same two isurim apply to the malve? Well, nema neshech v'loiva v'nema neshech v'malve. Well, again, you have these two places where it mentions neshech, one in Bahar, one in Kisei, where one is addressed to the loiva and one is addressed to the malve. So, ma neshech ha'oma v'loiva, just like when it comes to the word neshech, when it speaks by the loiva, lo chilakta bo ben v'kesef ben v'oichol ben v'neshech ben v'ribis, there's no distinction between whether it's food, whether it's money, or whether it's food, and whether the issue of neshech versus the issue of tarvis, of marvis, because the pasuk in Bahar is addressed to the loiva. So just like there, the Torah spells out that it applies to kesef and oichel, as kapsach leisit and lemeneshech over marvis leisit and ochlecha. And we see over there the word neshech, and we see the word marvis. Af neshech, the same thing. When the Torah says in Kisete, lo sashich lo achicha, same thing. Lo tachot lo ben kesef ben oichol ben mineshach ben biris. There's no distinction. The same thing applies.
There's a big chiddush for the loive. I don't see the chiddush for the malve. It's obvious that the malve is going to lend if he lends with interest.
But that's the point. You only have one place where you only have, and it's true, in both psukim, the Torah mentions kesef and oichel, but only in one of them does it mention the concept of tarvis, marvis, whatever, as well. Mm-hmm. And that one is referring to the loiva. Therefore, so there you see it applies to the loiva. How do we know the same concept applies to the malva? That is why we use sort of a gzeira shava from the word neshech. Therefore, that's because once it says neshech by one, and we know that neshech includes tarvis, as we established before, the same thing it applies to the other.
You would think that maybe not.
You know what? When you get down to it, I mean, the same way as you're entitled to charge rent for something for renting out something, you would think maybe you're entitled to charge essentially rent for your money. As a matter of fact, we're going to see later in the Perek that one of the Amoraim thought that maybe you can do that.
And
we're being told that not.
If the Torah only said the loive, if the Torah said nothing, for sure we would have known by the malve. But since the Torah says the loive, we might have implied that it's only by the loive, not by the malve. That's why.
That's the point. Now we know that it applies to both. Remember, the malve is not actually doing anything. The malve is receiving it passively. You would think maybe that's less
stipulated.
He may stipulate it, but fine. You know, talk is cheap. The loiva is the one who's actually handing over the ribis. You would think that
he has no other choice.
Okay, but nevertheless, but he's doing a maisi. You would think that's more serious. No, therefore, we're saying that it applies equally well to the malve. By the way, minayim l'rabis kol dover. Okay, how do we know that this concept of neshech and marvis applies to other items as well? How do we know it applies to anything else you might lend out? Tam lema neshech kol dover. Asher yishach, therefore, the Torah continues neshech of anything on which neshech can be taken. Which, by the way, Tosfos points out, in that case, then why b'chalal does the Torah mention kesef and oichol in the first place?
Well,
just
yeah.
Say neshech kol dover asher yishach. Okay, the answer is, Tosfos says, what we have here is a klal of prat of klal over here.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it means that there are certain things that are excluded. Namely, Tosfos said, this is the first Tosfos over here discusses it, Namely, karka, for example. Normally, obviously, when you lend out karka, you're not, I was telling you yesterday, there's a difference in English. We use the word lending for everything, but in Hebrew you have two different words: the she'ela and the halva. She'ela is when you're lending out something and expect the same thing back. You lend somebody your car, you expect the same car back. As opposed to halva, for example, you lend them money, you're not expecting those particular coins or bills or whatever back. You just want the value back. Same thing with grain, etc. Ribis only applies to halva. It doesn't really apply to she'ela because it's not really relevant. You're returning the same object. However, apparently what Tosfos is talking about, let's say, for example, I lent you some karka, and the understanding is at some point you're going to give me back another piece of karka, not necessarily the same one. Ribis would not apply to that because it's not similar to kesef or oichel. It's not metalfin.
And it's different. You would give back a different piece of
You'd give back a different piece of land. Apparently, that has to be the case. If you're returning the same piece of land, of course there's no ribis involved.
No, well, I thought that you could have plants that the field grew better.
Okay, that's possible. Maybe.
That might be considered ribis.
Could be, but again, that's she'ela, though. There's not really a question of ribis when it comes to she'ela. It's really how
well. If I lent you my animal, you took really good care. You fed him real well.
Yeah, but not really.
So that's fine.
Yeah.
You could stipulate the lease of land in return for that parcel and another parcel.
Maybe. Okay. Whatever. Anyway.
If you're giving the same land, that's not an issue.
Well, it seems that if you're giving back the same land, it's not an issue. It seems that Lahore would only be a problem if it's Haval, where we're returning a difference. Okay, Tosfos says also, for example, if you lend somebody less than a Shavah Prota, can't be called Mamoin. You can't call it Neshech or Oichel. You can't call it Kesef or Oichel. Therefore, again, that would be excluded based on that.
We'll now some talk about the
family. Because from the call of Prophet Paul, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Onward. Come on.
Okay.
Ravina Omar. Loi neshech v'oichov loi ribis v'kesef tzrichi kra. You know, when you get down to it, you actually don't need the Torah to mention neshech when it comes to food, or the ribis when it comes to kesef. You don't need a pasuk to be able to have to learn from the loiva to the malva. We can see it in the pasuk itself. The ikziv es kas v'cholay sitin lebe neshech v'ochlof chal v'marbis. If the Torah had phrased it like this, don't give him your money with neshech and your food from marbis or tarbis, whatever, kidka amris. Then, yes, you'd have a point that neshech only refers to kesef, marbis, tarbis, whatever, only refers to oichel, and therefore you'd need a limud then from the pasuk in kisese that says that it applies equally well to the other one as well. But now, look how the Torah phrases it. Don't, your money you should not give him for neshech, and for marbis you should not give your food. So the word neshech and marbis are adjacent to each other in the pasuk. Therefore, we can reread the pasuk differently. We can reread the words neshech and marbis themselves as referring to both. As kas b'cholay sitin leben neshech over marbis. So therefore, we see that neshech and marbis apply to kesef. Over neshech over marbis leis sitin ochlacha. And furthermore, we can reuse the words neshech and the words neshech and marbis to refer to ochlacha, your food. So automatically, you know from now. I add it backwards. Actually, the one in Bahar, the pasuk in Bahar, is addressed to the malve, that the malve is not allowed to lend at interest. The other one in Kisei, it's a transitive verb, means don't cause neshech to be done, meaning you, the loiver, are not allowed to pay neshech, are not allowed to pay interest. So before we were saying like this. The one in Kisese, which mentions Neshech Kesef and Neshech Oichel, is the one from which we learn that Neshech and Tarbis apply equally well to both. We wanted to say we have to learn from that back to the Pasuk in Bahar, even though it only mentions Neshech in connection with Kesef and Marbis in connection with Oichel, and we had to learn from the Pasuk in Kisese that it applies the other way around as well. Ravina says you don't even need that. The one in Bahar, because it puts Neshech and Marbis together, therefore teaches us Neshech and Marbis apply to the first half of the pasuk, and they also apply to the second half of the pasuk.
So
from that pasuk alone, you know that the pasuk which says loy sitin loy, meaning that you the malva are not allowed to lend at interest. We see from that automatically that both Neshech and Marbis apply equally well to Kesef from the first half of the Pasuk and to Oichel from the second half of the Pasuk.
So what do we need both?
So now we have a clear limud. In other words, we don't need to learn it from the fact that it says Neshech in both places. So which the Gemara asks, Hatana Nemer Nemer Karmer. Why didn't we learn in the Braisa before that because it says Neshech in one place and it says Neshech in the other, therefore we learn from one to the other, like a Gzeira Shava, according to Ravina, you don't need that. The answer is, you're right, Hachikamer, you're right. Ravina would say what the Braisa means,
right.
You're right that you don't really need the Gzeira Shava. What it means is like this, Ilu, Loi Nemakra, if you did not have the Pasuk phrased the way it did, where Neshech and Maris are placed together in the middle of the Pasuk, such that they can refer to one and they can refer to the other, if it weren't for that, then we would need the word. Then we would need the gzera shava from the fact that it says neshech by both names. But now that in fact the pasuk is phrased the way it is, gzera shava like tzarech. So now in fact you don't need any more the gzera shava from neshech, because now you automatic, as Ravina says, you automatic, you know it already from, you know that it applies to the loiver from the pasuk in kiseitze, because it mentions over there neshech by both kesef and echo. And there, and you know, for the loifer, and you know that it applies to the malva, for the posik and behar, because again, because neshech and marbis are placed in the middle of the posik over there, where they can refer to both ends. So therefore, you have, you don't need the as kaspachol is sitting lebin neshech, over marbis lo is sitting achlachol. So we said neshech and marbis, you can read it as, you don't have to stop by the esnachta, by neshech. You can read, you can skip, you as kaspachol is sitting lebin neshech over marbis. So neshech and marbis apply to kesef. Or you can reread it. B'neshech of a marbis leisit in achlacha. So food also neshech and marbis upon. Okay. So the question is of the gzeira shava lomali. Okay. Then why do you need the gzeira shava? After all, okay. The braisa. Fine. We don't need the gzeira shava to teach us from loiva to malva. But after all, we do have the gzeira shava of neshech. What are we doing with that? The answer is l'neshech kol davar asher yishach to leikatzav b'malva. Yes, but we do need it for one particular detail, which it says by the loiva, which it does not say by the malva. Namely, in kisese, the Torah adds, which we said before, neshech kol davar asher yishach, that you're not allowed to take neshech from anything else on which neshech can be taken, meaning not only money or food, but any other goods that you can lend out, except like Tosa said karka or whatever. That you don't have by the loiva, you don't have that by the malva, rather, you don't have that in the pasuk and parashas Bahar. That's what we need the gzeira shava neshech for. Otherwise, we would not realize if you're lending out something else other than money or food. You're lending out, you're lending out paper, for example. You know, I'll lend you a ream of paper, and I expect that too. If you didn't have, we know the pasuk mentions it by the pasuk mentions it by the loiva. The loiva is not allowed to make such an arrangement. How do we know the malva is not allowed to receive it? Only from the gzeira shava neshech. And therefore we need that gzeira shava after all.
That's a quote of Ravina as well? That's a quote of Ravina as well? Yeah.
That, okay, even Ravina would agree to that, yeah. Amar Rava. Lomali de kosev rachmona lav beribis lav begezel lav beino. Why does the Torah have to give us three different lavim for ribis, for gezel, for stealing from somebody else, and for oino? On the face of it, all three of them have something in common. Rashi says, all of them, you're taking away money from somebody else. Why shouldn't we be able to have the Torah could tell us one, and we would learn the other two from it?
What are the three?
The three are ribis, gezel, and oino. In all three of them, you're unjustly taking away money from somebody else. So why do we need all three of them? It's tzrichi.
Ribis is a form of gezel.
Wait. The answer is tzrichi. We do need all three of them. Because of Rachmana lav by ribis, because if the Torah had only told us the lav by ribis, you would say, you know why the Torah has to tell us that? Mishum dechidushu. Because there's something unique about ribis. You wouldn't have known about it from Dafila Beloiva also Rachmana. That was saying that even the loiva is violating an isser by doing that, by giving ribis. So you could argue that, fine, the fact that the Torah tells us by ribis, where unlike the other two cases where it's being taken away from you involuntarily, here the Torah is saying you're not allowed to voluntarily give away ribis. So therefore you would say, fine, okay, that's a special din. There is a cost if you're not allowed to do ribis. You wouldn't learn from that to other cases, right, where one person is taking it away by force from the other person, such as by gezel. But you wouldn't know though.
So this couldn't be the one.
You couldn't, right. So yeah. The ikos of Rachmana lav the gezel, and furthermore, what about if the Torah had only written lav of gezel? You would say Mishum Dvar Kochi. fine, you would argue, okay, but the difference is Gezel takes place completely against the other guy's will. He grabs it away from him. But after all, they did enter into a business deal willingly. The guy is willing to buy something from you. Not like, in other words, by Gezel, the guy...
He knows about it now?
No, he doesn't know about that.
But he's not willing.
The difference is, by Gezel, there's no prior relationship between them. The relationship begins when he grabs the thing away from him. Mashenkin, when it comes to Einah, one person has something to sell, the other one comes to buy, there is a willing transaction between them. It turns out he ends up getting gypped, he ends up getting charged more than he was supposed
that
to.
That would be unwilling.
It didn't start out as something unwilling.
So what?
No one forces the buyer.
You wouldn't, exactly. No, yeah,
because he doesn't know.
But that's the thing, you wouldn't know that.
And if you know, some people say, yeah, I will create this way.
Wait. Okay. The Kosev Rachmana lav ba'ina. On the other hand, if the Torah told us only the lav ba'ina, then you couldn't learn the other ones from it. You would say, Mishum de lo yoda de mochel. Because the difference is, ba'ina, the guy never knows. He may never find out. He may never find out that he was cheated, such that he should be able to be mochel. Mashenkin by Gezel, he knows the thing was stolen from him. By Ribis, he knows that he's paying interest. Maybe he is able to be medical. Therefore, you couldn't have learned it. Therefore, you couldn't have learned them from Einah.
Two different situations. One
that's
is aware, and one is
that's
aware.
That's what we're saying. Each one has a unique.
So you cannot derive.
That's
one
the point.
The
each one has a unique feature. That's what we said. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, as far as this that we're mentioning, as far as mechila, when it comes to ribis, is probably a good place to mention. There is an interesting machlokas v'shoinim. We know obviously that you're not allowed to l'chatchila agree to give ribis. That's what we established before. There was a surim on it. What about after ribis was paid? We're going to start talking on Amud Beis. What case is based in is able to take it away from the malver or not? What about if the loiva wants to forgive it? He says it's a case. Let's say it's one of the cases which we'll talk about on Amud Beis where based in is able to take away the ribis from the malver and return it to him. What happens if the loiva who gave that ribis says, you know what, never mind, don't bother taking it. Sort of. Is he able to be moichel or not? So the Rambam brings, some of the Gaonim said no. The whole point is, obviously, when a person goes and borrows money at Ribis, it means he's being moichel. It means he was willing to be moichel that extra amount and give it, and yet the Torah asks it. Therefore, Mechila never helps by Ribis, even after the fact.
Why can't you say
the Rambam himself?
It's an avera, the whole thing.
Yeah, the whole thing is an avera from start to finish. The Rambam himself disagrees with that. The Rambam says it's no different, for example, than the case of a gazlan. We learned in Bava Kamma that Adarabba, when a gazlan wants to return what he stole, we try to not have the nigzel take it from him because we want to make it easier for the gazlan to do tshuva. So we see there he's able to be moichel. Tachanas hashavim, right? So the Rambam says by the same logic you could say over here. Yes, he's not allowed to be moichel in the first place to give ribis. Of course not. But once it was already taken from him. Yes, he has the ability to be moichel. Most other Rishonim indeed agree with the Rambam on that, and that's the established halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that he can be moichel after the fact. Yeah.
So that's like Tekana Rishonim.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Not really a Tekana Rishonim.
It's a different. We're going to talk on Amud Beis. We're going
to
start talking
to make them admit that they did.
No, not really. We're going to start seeing later. We'll discuss later in the Gemara why it is. But I'll tell you, there is a letter from the Rebbe where he discusses this machlokas and concludes that basically what it comes down to is, according to the Rambam and the Rosh and the rest of those Rishonim who say that you're able to, what it boils down to is once the Malva has collected that ribis, it's considered 100% his mamon. Maybe mitzad to be lotus yidei shemayim, mitzad yiras shemayim, if he wants to do proper tshuva, he should return it. But mitzad, and we'll see on Amud Beis. We'll see in some cases it is considered gezel and Beis does have the right to take it away from him. But even in those cases, it is still considered his mamon, just maybe Beis has the right to take it away from him, but not to the extent where the loiva couldn't be moicholos and therefore there's no recourse. Yeah.
What do we see that the Torah allows him to moichel?
That's what Rambam says. Logically, it's no different than a nigzel.
What did he take it from?
He takes it from, again, that's just because, yes, the Torah outlawed giving it in the first place, but once it was given, then he...
Because it just outlaws to begin with,
yeah.
Just like a gun, I think, the kid
sometimes. Yeah, okay.
You can say it's an analogy, but you need still a basis.
Well, that's the Rambam's basis.
Okay.
And again, most of
the
Rishonim. Okay.
The Torah doesn't say opposite, so that's the reason.
Basically, yeah. Okay. Okay, the question is fine. Chodah mechodah le'asya. Fine. Okay. We established that the Torah could not have told us one of these three things, Gezel, Ribis, or Inah, and learn the other two from it, because we said each of them has a unique feature. Fine. Teisichah demitarti. Fine. Why doesn't the Torah tell us two out of the three of them, and we'll learn the third one from it? Okay. Question is, hey, Teisi. Fine. Which one do you want to be able to learn from the other two? Should we say, Loilis Rahman Allah Ribis for Teisi Mahanach? Should we say, fine, the Torah should tell us the dinim of Gezel and the dinim of Inah, and we would understand from that the dinim of Ribis? Can't. Malahanach Shaken Shalomi Das. Because both of those things ultimately are Shalomi Das, because Inah, again, he may never find out about it, and Gezel didn't involve his Das in the first place, it was taken from him forcibly, as opposed to Ribis, he agrees to begin with. Maybe it shouldn't be also. You wouldn't.
Right, it seems to be repeated.
No, we're saying, because we're saying you can't even learn it from both of them.
We're going the other way around.
We're saying even if you had two of them, you couldn't learn ribis from it. Loi lech rechmon a lava ina v'teisim ha'anach. Fine, let's try and say maybe the Torah shouldn't have written the lava of ina, and we could have learned it from the other ones. Problem with that. Malahana shakein en derech mekoch memka b'kach. The difference is, though, that when it comes to gezel and when it comes to ribis, those are not the normal things of doing business. Gezel is not a normal way of doing business, and ribis is not doing business at all. It's just lending money. Come on, no.
Ribis is a business.
Ribis is fine, but it's not buying and it's not derech mekach or memker. It's not part of the normal process of buying and selling. Doesn't involve loans at ribis. So you could argue, in other words, you could say that. In other words, when it comes to Inah, Rashi says you could argue. Sometimes you have somebody really desperately wants something and is willing to buy it at a higher price. So you would think maybe the Torah has no problem with that. Fine, capitalism. You charge whatever the market will bear. No, so you can't learn it from the other two. Okay.
According to the Goyish laws, I think there is no such thing as Inah.
Okay, well, that's Goyish laws. According to Goyish laws, there's no such thing as Ribis either, right?
Usury is true.
Yeah. Okay. No, usually it's something else. They outlaw charging too high rates of interest. Yeah. They have no problem with interest in general. The whole financial system. What? That's true. We'll learn about that later in the past. Yeah.
Gezel's probably mutter too. We just have to figure out where.
No. Come on. Okay. Okay. Ella, no, the argument is like this. Let's argue, maybe the Torah did not have to write the mitzvah, the issue of Gezel, the issue of Loistigzel, and we should be able to deduce it from the other two. The my parchas, because how would you slog that up? You would argue Malu Ribis Shekin Chiddush. You would argue Ribis has a unique Chiddush that the issue is even on the loiva, like we said before. Okay, Anah Techiach. Okay, you can answer from Anah. By Anah, only one or the other party, whichever one is charging more or paying less, is the one that's over, the other one is not. And we see Anah is still offered. So therefore, you see, it's not just a unique situation where the Malva and the Loiva, the giver and the receiver, both have an issue. You see, even by Anah, where only one party has the issue, it's still offered. You could say the same thing applies to Gezel. You would argue Malva Anah Shekin La Yado Maso. You would argue then that Anah is different because he may never know about it to be Michael, as opposed to the others. Okay, Ribis Techiach, again, proved from Ribis, where he did know in advance, and yet the Torah outlaws it. V'chazer Adin, so therefore you can go back and forth. Loiva Izek, Rizek, Rizek, Rizek. Each one has a unique feature which is not like the other. Hatsada Shava Shaban, but what do Ribis and Einar have in common? Shekain Gozloi, that you're taking away something unjustly from the other person. Achan Yovi Gezel. In that case, we could learn Gezel from that. So that's the argument. Why should the Torah have had to mention all three when the Torah could have only told us you're not allowed to take Ribis, you're not allowed to do Einar, and we ourselves would understand from that you can't do Gezel? The answer is Amri. They answered Hachinami. Enochinami, that is true. You could technically have learned Gezel from the other two, which, by the way, Tosfos points out. Why? I mean, what about the concept of Ein Mazhirin Min Adin? You can't deduce a lav from a tzada shava like that. You can't punish a person based on a lav that's learned by a limud like that. You need an actual explicit lav in the Torah. Tosfos answers you anyway. You can't punish a person for Gezel. Gezel is one of those examples of lav anitik la'eseh, where once you committed the lav, you undo it, not by getting the punishment. It's not that you get punished by getting malchus or whatever. Rather, you have a mitzvah to return it. as opposed to, for example, so the classic case of a lab, the classic case of a lab for which you get malchus is like fasten shobadisha, for example, muzzling an ox while threshing, which we'll learn about the details of that in a later parak of Amasekta, where once you did it, there's no undoing it. Therefore, one of the criteria for a lav to be chai of malchus is that it's not nitek la'efe. That's not something that can be undone by doing an efe afterwards. Gzela, you can undo by returning it.
But Beribis, can you undo it?
Well, you could return it. We're going to get to that later. The point is that we're not dealing with that right now. We're saying, in other words, Tosfos is saying, if we had learned Gezel by this Tzad HaShava that we're just talking about, it wouldn't be a problem that, in that case, you can't punish the guy, because anyway, Gezel is not something you punish a person for. He just has to return it. Well, either way, yeah. I mean, if he's kind of the Gzela, then he's, yeah. But either way, he's Makayim Beheshev as a Gzela once he returns the value, yeah. El Olav Gezel Lomeli. So in that case, Taka, why does the Torah say a separate Lav by Gezel?
That reason, he should punish the stealing.
No, because you don't. The fact of the matter is you don't. It's a lava nitic lasset.
Oh, even with the surplus?
Yeah. The reason is lakovish schaz sofer. We don't really need the words lois sigzo to teach us the issue of gzela. We could have learned that by the Tzad HaShava. Rather, we use it for the issue of kovish schaz sofer, of withholding wages for a worker, which is a form of gezel.
That's a lav shenitek la'ase.
So it is actually a lav shenitek la'ase also because you.
You give him the wages.
You pay the guy the wages.
No. But
yeah,
you didn't pay it on time.
No, but that's not the point.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but okay, but
so how can you pay it back if it's not on time? It's not on time.
Because at the end you do pay him. You have a mitzvah in the Torah, b'yomer titin schori. You have an effort to pay him on time. But if you didn't, if you were over on that, lo salve olav hashemesh, you were over on a lav. But still, you can undo it by giving it to him later on. However, that's the thing. Meforshim explain what it is that what Tosfos says over here is that if you kovish schar socher, what's going to happen is based on what we're saying over here, you're over on two lavim. One is the broader lav of Gezel. The other is the specific, because you didn't pay him. The other one is the specific one of Kovish Chasacher. When you later on pay him, you've only undone one of those lavs, not the other. Therefore, you're going to get Malchus for it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not Nitzik Classic.
Both of them are not Nitzik Classic. You only have one effort. You only have one action that hasn't overridden, that hasn't taken care of both of those yet.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, the question is, Kovish Chasacher behead you Ksid Bela, Sasha Chasacher on Evangian. Okay, but that you have an explicit pasuk that says you're not allowed to withhold the wages of a poor or needy worker. The answer is Lav or Olav, Shnei Lavim. That's just it. You're over on two Lavim, and like Tosfos says, therefore, you end up getting Malchus for the one of them because it wasn't undone by paying.
One
was undone, but not the other, yeah.
So in the end, you get Malchus because of this, even though it's not a straightforward one.
Right. Right. So that, but what we're saying is though that when it comes to regular gezel, Yitaka didn't need the pasuk lo sigzel. You could have learned it from the Tzad HaShava. We use the word lo sigzel to teach us that if you kovish schar socher, you're going to get malchus for that.
In the pasuk, you have two lavim for that kovish socher.
One is a specific one, lo sashik socher on evangion. The other one is the generic one, lo sigzel. We're saying the generic one you could have learned from the Tzad HaShava, but we have the specific one Okay, the question is the loikma beribis v'inav alav rola b'shnei lavin. In that case, then if we're anyway saying that loisigzo is not applying to regular gzela because we could have learned from a Tzad HaShava, in that case, why don't you just argue instead that it applies to ribis or inav and say that one of them you're over on two lavin, or in the case of ribis really it would be three because we already said neshach and ribis, but neshach and ribis, but whatever. So you'd have an extra lav in the case of those two. Why are we assuming that it applies to schar oniv avin? The answer is, one of the famous Yud Gimel Midas, Dovra Alamin Minyane, we learn from what's in context over there. Now this pasuk, Lo Sigzo, is talking in connection with Schar Sacher. The whole pasuk in Parashas Kedoshim goes, Lo Sashik Esreacha, V'Lo Sigzo. So therefore, no, Lo Sashik means to withhold. I mean, Sashik, Ayin Shin Kuk means to withhold unjustly, yeah. So the pasuk says, "Lo sashik, What's the lashon? What did I just say? Don't withhold from your friend. And don't do gzela. So therefore, we have to understand if we're going to say that lo sigzo was not necessarily gufoi, it's more logical to apply it to lo sashik as re'acha, which it says right before it in the pasuk, rather than ribis, which it says in a different in other parashiyos, or no, which it says in other parashiyos. We learn from context. Fine. Since we're talking about things that we could have learned by a limud over here, we said that gezel technically you could have learned by tzad hashava between ribis and enah. Let's talk about some other ones. Lo tignovo dekas rachman olam ali. What about the pasuk also says it also in parashas kedoshim lo tignovo. Now Rashi points out the lo tignovo aseret adibros the gemara is not asking about because the gemara explains in Sanhedrin based on another dava alam minyano that it's talking about kidnapping. So we learn it from since it's adjacent to lo sirtach and lo sinach, which are chiyuv misa, so lo signav also must be something which is chayv misa.
Therefore,
gnev is neshama, which the Torah tells us elsewhere more explicitly in Parashas Kisei, say that kidnapping a person, that kidnapping another yid, is something that's chayv misa. But what about lo tignovu, that it says in Parashas Kedoshim, that is talking about plain old stealing. Again, what do you need that? Again, we could have learned it by a tzad hashava between ribis and anah by the same logic as we said before. The answer is l'chadatanya. Yes, we need it. We need the Torah needed to tell us because of what it says in a braisa. Lo tignovu really it's supposed to be means almanat l'meitat means you're not even allowed to steal from somebody else just in order to be mitzar him, just in order to make him feel bad. Which, by the way, there is a good deal of discussion among the... You would say, okay, so some of the Foshim talk about, are we talking about, for example, let's say that you took the thing, you're doing it in order to make him feel bad, in order that he should get worried that he lost the thing, and then you're going to put it back? The thing is, are we talking about, for example, that you're using it in between? Are we talking about that you stole it, you're actually using it, but the main purpose you stole it was just in order to harass the guy, later on you're returning it? Or are we talking about even if you're not using it and you're only doing it in order to harass him, maybe that's also offset.
Yeah. Why don't you think it's not?
Because you would.
You stole it.
You could argue that if you're not, you could argue, and some of the posts can do that if you're only taking it just as you're just taking it as a prank basically, and you're not even using it, maybe that can't be considered gneva.
He wasn't necessarily
going to be using it during that time anyway. He finds it's missing, and now he's all worried about it. Okay, whatever. And lo tignovu is amanas l'shalom tashlum kefil. Even if you're only stealing because you want to end up you want to give the guy some money, you know he's not going to take it from you as a gift, so you steal it with the intention, and afterwards you'll end up being brought to Beis Din, and you'll end up paying him tashlum kefil. You're still not allowed to steal with that purpose in mind.
Wow.
There is, by the way, there's a Gemara in Bava Basra. You know what? We're going to learn a Gemara in Bava Basra when we're going to have a whole sugya about Eov towards the end of the first parak of Bava Basra. It mentions an interesting thing over there that Eov says on himself that I would steal or pretend to steal whatever or feel from Yisoyim, improve it, and then return it to them. So now they have something better than they did before, and he's saying this is one of the great things that I did. But according to many opinions in the Gemara over there, he was a goy. For a goy, fine. For a yid, it's awesome. Maybe for a goy, whatever. I mean, we see from Eov that maybe for a goy, it's not such a bad thing. But whatever. What? There's a machlokus in the Gemara. There's a machlokus whether it was a yid or a goy. We'll see.
And with all those pains he was through, the all the...
We'll see. Relax. Okay. We'll see when we get there. It's in the first parak of Bava Basra. We'll get to it. Okay. We'll get to it in about 4 months, says Hashem. Okay. Next. Amalei Rav Yehima Le Rav Ashi. So, another one. Rav Yehima asked Rav Ashi, Lav Dekas Rachmanu B'Meshkol Islamali. What about another one? The Torah tells us in Isser, you're not allowed to have inaccurate scales or weights or measures or whatever. We're going to learn later on in Bava Basra, in a few months after the other one, we're going to have a whole sugya about the details of how to make sure that your scales are absolutely accurate, your weights are absolutely accurate, etc. Again, why do we need that? Why do we need that mitzvah? Again, l'chora, we could have learned it from the other ones. You're not allowed to cheat in anything. You're not allowed to do anah. You're not allowed to take a ribis. Therefore, you're not allowed to have inaccurate weights. Amalei, l'toymen mishkalos b'melach. So Rav Ashi tells him, yes, but the law comes to teach us that you're not allowed to take your weights and bury them in salt. What does burying them in salt accomplish? Rashi says over here it makes them heavier. Tosfos in some other place in Rav Basra talks about that it makes them lighter because it eats away at the metal or whatever. So therefore, Tosfos learns, we're talking, now remember, in those days you would have a seller would have his own weights when he's selling things, and a buyer would have his own weights when he's buying things. He also wants to make sure he's getting fair weight. So Tosfos learns over there, we're talking about the buyer's weights. He would want to make them lighter, and therefore he'll end up with more material. As opposed to, according to Rashi over here, you're making them heavier amounts. You're the seller. By making them heavier, you're going to sell less. You're going to be able to sell less product.
Simultaneously?
Not necessarily simultaneously. Maybe for some things they use one, for some the other. Whatever. Anyway.
Certain metals might corrode in a way that they...
That they become heavier. Have. Yeah, maybe. Because they might absorb more oxygen or more water or whatever. Yeah, who knows. Okay. Yeah. Whatever. Okay, the question is kind of Gezel Malia. Fine, that's full-fledged Gezel. What do you know? Yeah, we already have Gezel. What do you need that? The answer is lava or the Meshach Asiyah. The answer is that the Pasuk is teaching us, as soon as you do that, as soon as you bury the weights in salt, even before you actually use them, you're already over on the Asiyah. That you wouldn't have known from the other one. That's huge. Another one. Turn it up on them. But the Pasuk says, speaking of this matter of honest weights and measures, the Pasuk says you shouldn't do any injustice in mishpat. Mishpat over here doesn't mean judging and based in. It means the mishpat of weighing and measuring. The midah, the mishkol of a masura. When it comes to midah, which is measuring, the mishkol weighing over masura or liquid measurement. What does this mean? The midah is a medidas kalko. When it says the midah means, for example, measuring out land. So you have, for example, let's say Rashi says you have brothers who are dividing up a field or dividing up their father's estate. You shouldn't have, when you hire a surveyor to survey it and then divide it up, don't have that he measures one brother's portion during the summer and the other one during the winter. Because, Rashi says, the rope, in those days, they use ropes for measuring, the rope stretches more, it gets wet during the winter from the rain, therefore it stretches more. And it shrinks during the summer. So if you measure in the summer versus the winter, there's going to be a difference in measurement. We're not talking about the thickness of the rope, we're talking about the length of it. The length of it is going to be, it's going to be maybe a couple of inches different. There's a Gemara someplace else that mentions the point of it is you always have to come to the Gemara where I think it's later on in Ar Masechta actually, where one of the Amoraim points out to a surveyor, he says to him, you should always keep in mind that any piece of ground can be used to plant kauka, which is saffron. It's a very expensive spice. Even nowadays, it's a very expensive spice. They use it in Indian cooking, whatever. You only need a tiny plot of land to plant one saffron flower, one crocus flower, and it produces a fortune. So therefore, you always have to be careful, even to the nth degree, with measuring land, because you take away even one inch from the guy, conceivably he could have made a fortune out of that. That's what we're saying over here.
Well, it should be so expensive that it goes all over.
Yeah, but you could conceivably plant it anywhere, but in practice, whatever. There's another explanation, by the way, which is also that the ground itself shrinks and expands a little bit between the winter and the summer. You know how sometimes you see the ground cracks during the summer, and then it.
We have these rubber bands between the tiles on the streets.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. B'mishko, what does it mean to be honest in weights? Shalayat m'mishalos of melech. Like we just said, you shouldn't bury your weights in salt to make them heavier or lighter, as the case may be. Uva masura means shalayartiyach. When it comes to liquid measurement,
by extension, in any other material.
Yeah, obviously. Uva masura shalayartiyach. The word masura, liquid measurement, teaches us that you're not allowed to make it foam, which means Rashi says that in other words, when you're pouring liquid, you can pour gently so that you have liquid in there, or you can pour, like when you pour, think about when you pour soda, sometimes you can make it where half the cup is foam, Don't do that. And even with a masura, which is
a cappuccino, what are you expecting?
Come on. Even a masura, which as the Gemara is going to say, is a very small measurement, and therefore the difference between the foam and not is going to end up being a very small amount. Other mafoshim, by the way, say that yartiach means also in the simple sense of boiling. Boiling liquid, hot liquid, takes up more volume than cold liquid. So if you heat up the liquid before you pour it out, you're going to end up, you're pouring out less than you would have otherwise. Okay, v'alo dvorim kavachomer. And the Braita continues. Now let's make a kavachomer. Uma mesura shi echad mishloishim u'shloishim belug. Madacha mesura, which is actually a very small amount. It's 1/33 of a lug. A lug is about a pint, give or take. So 1/33 of that would be, about half an ounce. So even that, his pita olav Torah, even that, the Torah is particular, don't make, you're measuring out a half ounce cup, like a half a kelishkol of something, make sure that it doesn't foam up, and therefore the guy's going to get a little less liquid than he was entitled to. Kavachomer lahin v'chatsiyahin, v'shlishasahin, v'reviyasahin, v'lug, v'chatsilug, v'reviyasalug. Kavachomer, for larger measurements, that you have to be careful about these things. Omer Rav, since we're talking about things, why the Torah had to mention one thing or another, so here's some other ones. Lomeli dekatzer rachmoni yitzias mitzrayim beribis, yitzias mitzrayim gabetzitzis, yitzias mitzrayim b'mishkolis. Why is it there's three places, three mitzvahs that the Torah mentions that remember that the Eibusha took you out of Mitzrayim?
Are these the only three?
No, they're not the only three, but they're most, it's not a bright set of memory, but most of the other ones we can understand. For example, the Torah tells us about to remember yitzias mitzrayim, let's say, for example, when it comes to not treating a ger badly, because we understand, ger may yitzias mitzrayim. By giving Hanukka to an Eved Ivri, okay, you know, you were given a lot of wealth when you left Mitzrayim, make sure you do the same for an Eved Ivri. These three, there doesn't seem to be any particular connection between Yetzias Mitzrayim and them. So Ribis, Tzitzis, and Mishkolos, and then the mitzvah of honest weight. Why is it? Like this. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anu shivchanti b'Mitzrayim ben tipa shabachar l'tipa sheina shabachar. When it came to Mitzrayim, I was the one who distinguished between a drop, between a conception that produced the Bechor and one that did not produce the Bechor, because as Rashi points out, the Mitzriyot were very promiscuous. So you may well have had one woman was with ten different men. So she ends up having 10 Bechoris. Each of them is a Bechor of his father, even though for her it's already the ninth or tenth child or whatever.
No one knew that.
Yeah. Which is why, by the way, Meforshim say this is why when the pasuk says Mamakas Bechoris, there was a tremendous outcry, right? The Tzaka Gdolah B'Cholos Mitzrayim.
Right.
It wasn't just people were crying out because of all the dead people. There was also a lot of crying out because all of a sudden a lot of husbands are finding out that what was going on and what was really going on over there with their wives.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Onward.
They all saw me. All of a sudden.
Yeah. Okay. So the Eibusha says, I was able to make that distinction. Therefore, I who shall also be part of a mishatolam oitzu b'nachri. By the same token, I will punish somebody who goes and who claims that his money belongs to a guy. So he lends out money to other Jews at Ribis. And when you call him on it, what do you mean? It's not my money. I'm just acting as an agent on behalf of a guy. It's his money. But so the Eibusha will take care of that. The Eibusha knows the truth and will take care of that. Also from somebody who buries his weight in salt, where again the difference may not be noticeable, but the Eibusha knows. And also the Eibusha says, I will take care of somebody, I will punish somebody who puts kola ilan, which is indigo, it's a dye similar in color to tchelas, who puts it on his garment, and claims that it's tchelas. Real tchelas is very expensive because it comes from a certain kind of fish which only comes up out of the ocean once every 70 years, etc. Kala ilan is cheap stuff.
Where's the connection with Mitzrayim?
That's what this is, because the Eibusha is saying, when it came to Yetzias Mitzrayim, I knew who's the Bechor and who's not. The same thing, by each of these mitzvahs, it's very easy for a person to commit fraud and think nobody really knows. But the Eibusha says, I know.
Only Hashem knows.
We know that Hashem knows. Why?
Fine, but that's the chiddush. By each of these three things, you would think that maybe I can get away with it, but the Eibusha knows. By the way, I saw, as a side thing, an interesting verse quoted from Rabbi J.B. Soloveitchik. He says, why taka is the Torah so particular that you're not allowed to use kala ilan, that you must use tchelos? He says, because indigo is, which is what kala ilan is, fades after a while. That's, for example, blue jeans are dyed with indigo, and you see they fade after a while. Tchelos is color fast. It stays. In fact, the Gemara in Menachos tells us, it was recently in Rambam Shlosha Prokim, about a whole chemical test that you can test to see whether something is tchelos or not, and you see it doesn't fade even after that whole test. Therefore, he says it represents the idea our commitment to the Eibishter can't be allowed to fade either. It can't be like indigo that fades after a while. It has to be like tchelos that remains all the time. Further on this, Ravina Ikwal Surah de Pras. Ravina one time visited Surah on the Pras River. This isn't the famous surah where Rav had his yeshiva. It's a different town.
Really?
Surah was
yeah.
How do you know?
Because that's why the Gemara has to distinguish that surah the Pras.
Oh, okay.
The regular surah was on some other river. I don't know.
Was the Nar Hamela.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. Amalei Rav Chanina Misurah the Pras Ravina. Yitzias Mitzrayim because of Rachmana Gabra Shrotzim normally. What about there's another mitzvah where the Torah mentions Yitzias Mitzrayim to remember that I brought you out of Mitzrayim? Namely by the mitzvah that you're not allowed to eat Shrotzim, you're not allowed to eat bugs and worms and whatnot. Why is that? Amalei, so Ravina answers him. Same kind of thing. By the same logic, I will punish somebody who mixes kirve, which means eggs of treif fish, which are one of the forms of shrotim, with eggs of kosher fish, like when you buy caviar. You never know what you're getting unless there's a good heksher on it. So I will punish somebody who does that, umorchon Yisrael, and sells them to a Jew claiming that they're kosher. That's the connection of Yitzias Mitzrayim to Shrotim. Amalei, so Rav Chanina Misura tells him, you misunderstood my question. I know how Malek, Okashali. Actually, my question wasn't so much why it mentions Yitzias Mitzrayim. Why did the Pasuk say over there, I am Hashem who brought you up from Mitzrayim? The usual expression is that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. Why only here does it mention that I brought you up? Because of Ahmana. Why does the Torah mention Hamala over here instead of the usual Asher Hoytei Sicho or whatever? Yeah. Well, it is. That's fine. But we have places where it talks about Vayal Avram Mitzrayim, for example. Sure. But why over here specifically does he use the? So Ravina tells him that comes to teach us what they learned in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel. The Tanna of Rabbi Shmuel, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ilmolei Loi Ha'alesi Es Yitzroa Mitzrayim Ela B'Shvil Dover Zeh She'en Mitam Mishratim. If I had only brought the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim for the sake of this one thing, that they won't become Tomei by eating Shratim, Dayi, then it would have been enough for me. That itself is good enough reason to have brought the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Said Zeh B'Shtei, yeah. So Rav Chanina says to him, how is it possible? What is the reward for not eating shrotim greater than the reward for staying away from ribis and being careful about tzitzis and being careful of honest weight? Amalei, so Rav Chanina tells him, okay, afagav lenafesh agrayu, true, the reward for not eating shrotim is not necessarily greater than those things. However, they're more disgusting to eat. So therefore, Hamala Eschem at the time, the Eishes is saying, I accomplished a great mila by bringing you out of Mitzrayim, that now you don't eat those kinds of disgusting things.
We used to eat that.
Apparently. Or at least some people used to, I guess. I don't know. There's a sicha that Rebbe talks about. There's three places. There's three mitzvahs where we learn that there's a mitzvah for parents to teach their children to be careful about this mitzvah. One of them is eating shrotim. One of them is eating dam. And one of them is koyanim becoming tamei. There's this famous sicha where the Rebbe talks about. I don't remember what chelik it's in. Where the Rebbe talks about why if it's those three. And one thing is because when it comes to shrotim, it's something that's naturally disgusting. Most people wouldn't eat it. If you have somebody who's eating shrotim, he's obviously on a very low level to begin with. You would think, therefore, it's not what good is chinuch going to do for somebody for somebody who's such a low life that he naturally eats shrotim. The chiddush is even in that case, you have to work on chinuch. So that's the point of it. Even maybe the people as a whole weren't eating shrotim, but you had some low lifes among them who were, and therefore the Eibush is saying that's what I accomplished by bringing you up from Mitzrayim is I brought you up a level where at least you're not doing that. And that itself makes the Yitzias Mitzrayim worthwhile. Okay. Going back now to the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said, so the Mishnah had started off Ezo Neshech, and it gave two examples of Ribis Daraisa, when you lend money or food expecting more back. And then we said, Ezo Tarbis, Hamar Peiris. Then we said, what is Tarbis is when you have an increase in the amount of payers that you're going to get. And we have the whole scenario that the Mishnah described involving where you bought wheat on consignment, you didn't pick it up yet, the price of wheat went up later, you want to get the wheat, and instead the guy says, let's trade it for wine, and I'll give you wine, but he doesn't have wine in stock, which will, on Samach Beis and the Beis, we'll talk tomorrow what exactly the problem was with that scenario, but for the time being, let's take it as written. The question is, what do you mean, Ezehu Tabis? So what do you mean? Everything that we talked about when the Mishnah said that you lend somebody when you lend somebody a seller for 5 dinarim or 2 saw of wheat for 3 saw, isn't that also ribis? What do you mean? Ezehu tarbis? Now we're going to describe what ribis is. No, what the Mishnah means is ad kan shel Torah mikan ve'elach shel divrayim. No, what the Mishnah means is up until now the first two cases that it mentioned are ribis midoraisa. From now on, the Maru Peres and the rest of the Mishnah and the rest of the next two Mishnayos are going to be talking about ribis d'rabbanan. V'chein amar Rava ad kan shel Torah mikan ve'elach shel divrayim. Same thing. And Rava also says ad kan yochin rosha ve'yobash tzadik. Also, the difference is up until this point is a case where the Rosha prepares and the Tzaddik can wear it. Meaning, as we're going to start talking about in a minute, Ribis Midaraisa, the Dayanim are able, when the person himself is still alive, if the case goes to Beis Din, then the Dayanim will take it away from him and return it to the Loga. As opposed to Ribis Dirabanan, such as the case of Amar Peres, they will not. So when it comes to ribis d'oraisa, you have then when it comes to ribis d'oraisa, if the Rosha himself took ribis, he's not going to end up enjoying it because Beis Din will take it away from him. The later cases in the Mishnah, ribis d'rabbanan, even he himself will be able to enjoy it because Beis Din will allow him to keep it. So Ad Kan, however, what happens if the Rosha himself dies and his children inherit him? They're not obligated to return it, as we will talk about tomorrow on some of Beis Amoralis.
Even
Ribis D'oraisa. So that's the point. Ad Kan, Yochin Rosha V'Yobash Tzadik, up until this point, meaning Ribis D'oraisa, is a case where the Rosha prepares something and the Tzadikim, meaning the children, end up enjoying it, end up wearing it. After that, you don't even need that. The Rosha himself takes it and he himself ends up wearing it because he doesn't end up having to return it. That's the difference between Ribis D'oraisa and Ribis D'rabbanan. What do you mean? Ad kan v'tuloy? What do you mean only up until here? The el afilu ad kan yochin rosha v'yobash tzadik. No, that's what it means. Is even with Ribis D'oraisa, the tzadik, meaning the children, are allowed to keep it. With Ribis D'rabbanan, of course they're allowed to keep it. Even the guy himself is allowed to keep it. But ad kan is the case even when it comes to ribis d'oraisa, right, the children are allowed to keep it. Meaning, ad kan ribis chutza, another way of putting it is, up until this point, up until where the Mishnah starts off the ezer tabit, we're talking about ribis chutza, the fixed ribis, in other words, where they fix at the time of the loan, you're going to pay me X amount extra. Mekan ve'el chavat ribis. From here on, for the rest of this Mishnah and the next couple of Mishnayos, we're going to be talking about avat ribis, meaning ribis d'rabbanan.
So, midoraisa, if the Beis Din takes it, the children cannot enjoy it.
That's the point. In other words, but if they didn't, if the guy died without it having been taken away from him, then Beis Din will not take it away from the children. As opposed to ribis d'rabbanan, where there's no recourse to even take it from the children, from the guy himself in the first place. So, the Gemara starts off on that. Omer Rabbi Elazar, ribis k'tzutza yotze b'dayanim, ribis k'tzutza, again, where it was established at the time of the loan that you're going to pay me extra, that can be taken away by the dayanim. Beis Din will force him to to return it. There is, by the way, further besides that I mentioned before about a machlokas rishonim whether the loiva can be moichalit. There's also a further machlokas, which is even we're saying over here yotze b'dayanim. Does that mean they would go so far as yodin l'nechasa that they would actually, if he doesn't have money to pay, where they would go take away, let's say, a field from him as if he was a balchoyv, or maybe not. Maybe only if he has cash available, then they would take it from him. But if he doesn't, if he only has karka, maybe they wouldn't. Again, machlokas were showing him on that.
Well, you said that, like, once he goes, he's over, it becomes like his money.
That's the argument why we say that the other guy is able to be machlokas. Yeah.
And what's the conclusion? They would take it or not if he doesn't have it?
I don't remember what the conclusion is in Shulchan Aruch. Avak ribis ene yotze b'dayanim. But when it's avak ribis, when it's only osim awesome, b'drabanan, that cannot be taken away by the dayanim. Rabbi Yechanan, I'm afilu ribis tsunami ene yotze b'dayanim. Rabbi Yechanan says no. Even ribis tzutze, even ribis d'oraisa, cannot be taken away by the dayanim. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my time is Rabbi Yechanan. Okay, what's Rabbi Yechanan's svara? Rabbi Elazar's svara, we can understand. The Torah said you're not allowed to take it. Therefore, Beis Din has the ability to undo it. Where does Rabbi Yechanan get that you shouldn't be able to take it from him?
Even when it's
like this. The Amar Kro, because you have a pasuk in Yechezkel that says, V'neshech nosa v'tavis lokach. You have a person, it describes over there like the ultimate Rosh, he's done all kinds of averus. including he gave his money, he lent his money at Neshech, and he took Tibus. Bachai, do you expect that he's going to live? Lo yichya, he's not going to live. Eskola te'evis ela also, because he did all these disgusting things. Meaning, what's the point of mentioning? Lo yichya, lemisa nitin v'loy lehishavayin. When a person takes ribis, Rabbi Yochanan understands the pasuk to mean the only thing that can happen is he's going to die. You can't say he's yotze by repaying. So therefore, you see that according to Rabbi Yochanan, Beisdin can't be taken away. If he himself does tshuva, that's different. Whichever the pasuk is not talking about the way he does tshuva. If he does tshuva, he's returning it on his own. But we're saying if he doesn't return it on his own, the only thing that will happen is the Eibishter will take care of him, that he will die. Maybe.
But that's
the difference. For example, if he stole, even if he himself doesn't voluntarily give it back, but Beisdin can force him to give it back. And therefore, once it's taken away from him by Beisdin, that's it. The Avera is taken care of. Okay, not totally, because he didn't ask for the Chila, et cetera, but fine. The basic thing has been taken care of. Here, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Pasuk is telling us the basic thing is not even taken care of.
Because Misa is enough.
And because that's it, because he gets Misa instead, yeah. Interesting thing, by the way, about this pasuk, v'chai lo yichya, why does the pasuk phrase it, v'chai, you think he should live, lo yichya, there's a medrash that says that when Yechezkel went to revive the bone, the famous bones, that some say Yevashis, that we read about Chol HaMoed Pesach, after what happens, you know, he says a nevuah, the bones start knitting back together, then he says another nevuah and a breath, and then life comes out, life force comes back into all of them, except the medrash says one of them still stayed dead. So Yechezkel says, what's the matter with that guy? Yerusha tells him he lent that ribbit. V'chai, you expect he's going to live? Lo yichya, he's not going to live.
Oh wow!
Yes.
Okay.
Where's that? It's a medrash. I don't remember where exactly. That sicha I mentioned yesterday, where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind ribbis versus heter iska, the Rebbe touches on this also. Since we said over there that the idea behind not taking ribbis is you recognize it's not just the Eibishter gave you koches to begin with and then he washes his hands of you, but rather that he keeps on being involved, well, a person who doesn't hold of that doesn't need tchias amesim. He doesn't need the Eibishter to be involved with him in the future. Rav Adar Ba'Ava says have a different limud. Omar Kra al tikach me'itin neshach v'tabis. The pasuk says, don't take from another yid neshach v'tabis. V'yoreitha melechecha, and you should fear the Eibishter, implying l'morda nitin v'loy lehishavai. It's something which, if you fear the Eibishter, you will not take it in the first place, or you will return it afterwards. Not that if you don't fear the Eibishter, you don't have the yoreitha melechecha, it can't be taken away from you. That's Rabbi Yochanan's mark.
So you don't get Misa.
That's not necessarily. Rava says you actually can see a third way of learning it. What Rabbi Yochanan's shita, you can learn it from the actual pasuk in Yechezkel. The pasuk says most you must daven boy. The pasuk says about this rasha over there, he shall die. His blood is on his head. Implying hukshu malve ribis l'shev chidamin. Therefore, we see there's a comparison between somebody who lends at ribis and somebody who kills. Because dam of boy is like somebody who the blood that he spills, that he actually says he caused the other person to become poor, so the other guy ended up dying of hunger. That will be on his head. Ma shev chidamin l'nitzel l'shevin. So just like when a person kills another person, there's no bringing him back alive. Ach malve ribis l'nitzel l'shevin. The same thing when it comes to lending at ribis. Rabbi Yochanan would say that we learn from that it can't be undone by based and taken away from him. Okay. Fine, that's Rabbi Yochanan's shita. Amr of Nachum Yitzchak, my time of the Rabbi Lazar. Fine. Where does Rabbi Lazar get his shita that Beisdin can take it away from him? Ribis Daraita. Because the pasuk says, the pasuk describes in Parashas Bahar, don't take ribis from another yid in order that your brother should live with you. Meaning, you should return it to him in order that he'll be able to continue going on living.
And if you don't, in other words?
No, not if you don't. But the point is, therefore we see from that there is a concept of returning it. There's a concept of returning it, and therefore Beisdin has the ability to enforce that. Okay. Fine, what does Rabbi Yochanan do with that pasuk?
It's only like a tax, but it's not the new actual money he gave back. It's just like a tax.
Right, but that's what we're talking. But that's because you have. You know, you lent him 100. You made him pay you 120. He's now missing $20 that he could have used to buy food for himself. Like this, he became poor from it. Yeah. So Rabbi Yochanan hay v'cheyachicha imach mai. Obviously, what does Rabbi Yochanan do with that pasuk? He uses it for a different limud that we learn in a brisa. Shnayim shoyim halchan baderech. Suppose you have two people walking on the road. Over yad echad mehem kitat shamayim. One of them has a pitcher of water. Im shoytin shnayim mesim. Now, if both of them are going to drink from it, if they're going to share it, shnayim mesim, both of them are going to die from thirst because there's not enough water for both of them before they get back to civilization. If only one of them drinks it and leaves the other one, then he will be able to get back safely to civilization and find water. What do you do? Dorash ben Petura, so ben Petura Daushin, Mutav Shiyushushneim via Musav al Yura Echamem Mitzasa Shachaberi. Better let both of them share it, even if both of them end up dying, rather than that one of them should keep it all for himself and have to end and see the other one dying and watch the other one dying. Ad Shabbat of Akiva Valimid, and that was how it was accepted until Rabbi Akiva came and taught that no, since the pasuk says v'chei achicha imach, your brother should live with you, meaning chayecha kodem l'chayecha vercha, your life comes ahead of somebody else's life. So therefore, imach with you.
So,
well, therefore, in other words, if you're actually, Maram Shif asked, what about the Eved Ivri? It says imach the ma'afal imach mishdei. You have to treat him on at least an equal level of you.
Right, exactly.
So they answer. I don't remember who gives this answer. The difference is that in the case of the Eved Ivri, you'll both be alive. He'll be sleeping on the pillow. You won't, but you'll both be alive. In this case, if you're dead, there's no imach anyway. In this case, if you're dead and he's alive, there's no imach anyway. Therefore, of necessity, imach means you help him live only if you yourself are going to be alive as well. Chayecha koydmin, your life still comes first. It's your water to begin with. You can't steal away from him. But if it's your water and that's what you need in order to survive, then that's what Rebbe Akiva is saying. You should do that. By the way, the Alter Rebbe points out in Tanya, in one of the letters in the Geras HaKodesh, the Alter Rebbe points out, you know, so what? How does this apply to, for example, to a person who's poor, let's say, and can barely afford what he needs for himself, let alone to give tzedakah? The Alter Rebbe says we're talking about here about water, something which is essential to life. But if you have, for example, one person who has he can afford basic food for his family, he just can't afford nice food for Shabbos, and you have somebody else who can't afford nothing, there's no chayecha koydmin over there. Then you got to be willing to forego a little bit of the luxuries on your Shabbos table. So yeah. So anyway, that's what Rabbi Yochanan does with the Fecheyachicha Imach. He doesn't learn from that it means that you have to return Ribbis. Therefore, hence the machlokes between him and Rabbi Lazar, whether Ribbis is something that has that based in can force the returner. What's his mace? Okay, I have a contradiction. You're telling me that according to Rabbi Yochanan, that you don't return Ribbis. That's either you chayev misim de shemayim, but that's it. There's no recourse. A Braisa says, Hiniach lehem avia moris cho ribis. If you have children who their father left them over money of ribis, afishe yodin shein cho ribis, even if they know that this money was collected as ribis, einen chayavan lachzir, and they're not obligated to return it. Which implies, havian chayav lachzir, implying that if their father was still alive, he would be obligated to return it. That works out according to Rabbi Lazar. What does Rabbi Yochanan do with that Braisa? The answer is no. Bedinu davur namlin chayv lahachzir. No, the fact of the matter is, Rabbi Yochanan would say the braisa doesn't mean that the father himself would have been obligated to return. He also is not obligated. But I did kaboy lemisni sefer. However, since the braisa continues, he niach le'navim part of a talus for holdover amasuyim. Suppose their father left them. Suppose it wasn't money, which money is fungible. Okay, they know he collected it from ribbis, but it's not necessarily the actual coin. People look at those coins. It doesn't say on them they're from ribbis. But suppose, for example, he left them a para. A cow or a talus, or anything distinctive, anything which is known is gezel or ribis, or as the case may be, chayavan lahachzim of nekrei davim. That they're obligated to return because of the covenant of their father. Therefore, tananami reisha b'did hu. Therefore, the first part of the braisa that Rabbi Yochanan would say also talks about in terms of their chiyuv, but not to say that the father would. Not to say that the father himself. So the first part of the braisa is saying they're potter from returning. In other words, the first part of the braisa. It means when it comes to money, everybody is potter. The father is potter because v'chai v'ham, or all the various, not v'chai v'ham, whatever, all the yoreis and elekecha, or v'chai lo yichya, or whatever, the various limudim that we said according to Rabbi Yochanan. The children are not obligated to return it anyway, because it's not their ribbon. However, if it's part of a talis, then the children are obligated to return it. It's nekrei davim, as opposed to if the father himself was alive, then he wouldn't have had to.
Even if he was a Russian, because that's the thing.
Well, that's what we're going to get to. Wait. Yeah, the question is, what do you mean? Behind Nekrei Davim Mechayvi? What do you mean the Chayv to return it because of the covenant of their father? Kodikan Menasi Ba'am Choloi Sar. Why don't you apply over here the pasuk that you're not allowed to curse a leader among your people, and we understand that to mean ba'osim ma'ase amcha. We're talking only about a person who acts the way that your people, the way a yid is supposed to act. This guy died as a rasha. Why is his covered important? The answer is k'da'amar Pinchas mishmei d'Rava. It would be like what Rav Pinchas says in the name of Rava, b'sha'asa tshuva, that you could be talking about that you can have a case where he did tshuva. Hachanami b'sha'asa tshuva. The same thing over here. You can be talking about where he did tshuva. Okay, the question is, he also tshuva my bari gabei. If he did tshuva, why didn't he return it himself? The answer is shelo hispik l'hachzu ad shemes. We can be talking about a case. He did tshuva while he was alive. He didn't have a chance to return it. Then he died. So now we're saying it depends whether the thing is money or whether it's a distinctive object. If it's money, if we know that he did tshuva,
how would we know he didn't return?
The children say.
That's why he changed his life.
Yeah, so. Whatever. But he didn't have a chance to return it, which Tosfos points out. This question works out according to both Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua. According to Rabbi Elazar, that he's supposed to return it, he should have returned it. And even according to Rabbi Yochanan, fine, it's not based in, can't obligate him to return it. But if he's doing tshuva, just mishum laz or boshet, he should have been concerned himself about his bad name. The fact that he's not concerned, why do his children need to be concerned? That's what we're saying. He did do tshuva. He didn't have a chance to return it, and then he died. Now we're saying, if it's money, the children aren't obligated, because anyway, there's no particular laz. Nobody's going to know that this money came from Rivas. Mashenkin, if it's a dover, I'm a suyam, then they should go ahead and return it because, after all, their father did tshuva, and therefore he owes him ma'isa amcha again, and they have to be concerned for his covet.
So if he died committing an avera, like in the middle of Gneva, then they we'll keep it.
Because then they don't have to be worried about his good name.
It's not only about his good name, it's the fact that he's keeping money that's ribis.
But it doesn't matter because they didn't collect it as ribis. However, I will mention, we did learn back in Eilu Metzias, we had a little piece of Gemara that mentioned over there, Misha Hiniach Le'ovig Moritz Rabos, that a person whose father left him over a lot of money and he wants to lose it. The Gemara mentions three ways to lose it quickly by using clear glass dishes and then wearing Roman linen, etc. I mentioned over there that there were higher workers that don't watch them yet. There were shown him. I think the Ritva and others learn have a girsa mishenich of Moritz Ribis. That we're talking about a case like this. His father left him money of Ribis. Technically, he's allowed to keep it. However, he would rather not have too much hanal from it. Therefore, the Gemara advises him how to spend it in a way where he'll end up using it up very quickly. Yeah, but not Moritz Rabos, but Moritz Ribis. Yeah.